With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Log Talk Radio.
Peace be on our noble and honorable listening audience. You are listening once again to another edition of Religion Means Alive. I'm your host, Imam Alfred, the host of Religion Means Alive. We have some young adults, business persons that will be coming on the program today. And we hope to have a lively discussion. And you can join the conversation at 805-727-7013. 805-727-7013. And you can discuss what is that is on your mind. Tomorrow we have a lively program. We will discuss some of the current events in the Muslim community of Imam Waruddin Muhammad. Thursday we will have the usual healthcare program with Dr. Rashad Alameen. Dr. Rashad Alameen is a natural health coach, neuropath, a physician. And he will be addressing the issues of health. Friday, I will be back again with our future co-host on Fridays from the upper room with our dear brother, Imam Yusuf Abdul Salam. And we are probably going to have a segment. We're waiting to confirm it. I don't want to give you the treat yet. But we may be at the Tribeca Film Festival. So a lot of good things are happening with Religion Means Alive. We appreciate your donations. Our support level is growing phenomenally. And the message should be given to the public that religion means alive. We're going to bring light back to the desert. And as sacred scripture says, let the desert bud roses. And out of the desert of the south side of Chicago, out of the desert of East End Atlanta, out of the desert of Vine City, Atlanta, out of the Ninth Ward of Houston, out of the Fifth Ward of New Orleans, life will return to these neighborhoods because religion means alive. Life will return to the academic halls with Charlie P. Houston. Not Reverend Charlie P. Houston, but Reverend Dr. Charlie Hastings and others walked at Howard University. Monica Johnson and other luminaries walked the streets pushing first-class citizenship. Religion Means Alive will return to these neighborhoods. We've had a short, dark period among us from about 1965 to the present, but actually it's short in the history of a people. We've been bombarded with everything except the kitchen sink, but I would argue that even not just the kitchen sink has been thrown at us, actually the whole house has fallen down on us. But yet, as Maya Angelou says, we rise. They're thrown 50 cents, 25 cents. Lil Wayne, Bootsy, Rick James. They all have been thrown at us, and yet we rise. We've been bombarded with imagery and iconography of distraught African-American masculinity. We've been disgraced, but yet we still rise. And it is the job of religion means alive to bring religion out of the ritualistic prison that it is in our communities, and to bring religion to our neighbors and to our home where it's active, where there is academic success, where there is business success, where there's cultural success, and there's order and government. Religion means alive. Religion is the guidance system that God has given to man to guide him. And never has there been a time in the history of African-American people where African-American people have not been motivated by what God wants for us. The evil one and his group have made sure that every time something is introduced with God's name, that they come along and introduce something after that. We had sacred music. Then they came and made it rock and roll and jazz. They took God out of the music and put love, fun, and sexuality in it. This week we are focusing on culture. And if you would like to join the conversation, you can join the conversation at 805-727-7013. The theme this year of the Muslim Convention, which will be held in Tinley Park at the Tinley Park Convention Center, is promoting excellence in the best tradition of African-American people. In other words, we can't throw away Murray McLeod Bethune. We can't throw away Sadie Hawkins Brown. We can't throw away Rosa Parks. We can't throw away Sister Cloud Muhammad. We can't throw away Sister Coretta Scott King. We certainly cannot throw away Marion Anderson, Leontine Price, and those such as Mahalia Jackson, who held up the high banner of civilization and refinement. Why? Because religion means alive. They believe that religion, the guidance of God, was the foremost factor in their lives. They believe that James Weldon Johnson believed that lift every voice, he said, and sing, and let freedom ring. And that's what religion means alive is about. It's bringing that life to the dead and increasing the life to the living. So, dear beloved people, while we await our guests, We want to welcome you to relax, to perk your ears up, perk your spirit up, get your pen and paper out, and also be prepared to work. This is a program of how to work. We're going to have Wolf Meaner, the dog, shortly with us. But you can join the conversation at 805-727-7013. 805-727-7013. Also, on Saturday, we will have the great Kalima Comancho Ali. She'll be back on the air again with us. She'll be at here in town in New York for the Tribeca Film Festival, The Trials of Muhammad Ali. She's going to tell us the story, the real story, that Muhammad Ali, how she coined the idea, the people's chant, how she worked with him when he didn't have a dime, didn't have a window and a place to throw water out of. But she worked with him. She's going to tell us how the Honorable Elijah Muhammad supported him financially when he didn't have anything. So these are things that's going to happen Saturday. I'm just excited about Religion Means Alive. I'm excited about your support. We're getting support from upstate New York. People are telling people around the country about our program. See, don't just sit and listen to this program and sit back and be like a goat, criticize and go from one program to another, and you don't tell somebody about it. Share it. Because we're building a movement. You know, if you put a whole millions of rocks together, you know, after a while, you have a mountain. And if a million of us are together, 10,000 of us together, we begin to build a pile, and eventually it becomes a mountain. And out of that mountain springs government. That's what we're interested in doing in Religion Means Alive. We're not here for a talk-a-thon. We're not here to just idle people. We're here to create life. Religion Means Alive. Hello? Call me on the air. What religion means alive?
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air, caller. Yes, I can hear you.
How are you? You said I could ask a question.
Question or comments? Small, mini speeches.
All right. Well, today is about culture, and I listen to you off and on. So I was wondering if you could tell me about our people and our culture, especially our children, and why our children think that being smart. Why do our children not like being smart? Maybe that's the answer. Why do our children think that? Why should they be ashamed to be smart? I see some children going to school and they're covering their book bags. They don't want with their coats. They don't want anybody to see them with book bags. They don't want anybody to see them carrying books. Some of them leave their books in school. What has happened to our children where we think that being smart, our children think that being smart is a bad thing. Some of them are called white. Some of them are called, nerds and things that are really negative. And I wanted to know, what can we do about it? What can we do as a people to make our children be in love with being smart again?
Well, you know, sister, you have raised a very important question. And I'm going to tell you what we can do about it. Imam Muhammad said, when he visited the Apollo Theater, and he was not allowed to use the Apollo on his DVDs and intellectual properties, he said, you all go to Jesse Jackson. He said, you all go to Persis Sutton. And you tell them that we want the Apollo back. We want to buy it back. Well, here's what I would say to our people, the Muslims and Christians and others, even African Americans who are atheists. Let's start a coalition. Coalition that Imam Muhammad gave us out of his toolbox. Coalition to reconstruct unified community involvement and leadership. And let's make this a priority. Let's get picket signs. Let's go through the neighborhoods. And let's tell our people, we want our life back. Part and parcel of wanting our life back, we want to understand how we got into this point. Well, we got into this point because we never created a narrative for our people of how Frederick Douglass had to actually use strategy to learn to read and write. That should be in our cultural DNA. We should not understand that Booker D. Washington had to walk approximately 800 miles. I'll get a call from some fact checker telling me I'm wrong. I don't mind that. But understand that another strong urge in our people was something they used to say as a popular saying and song. Oh, I just wish I knew what it was to be free. Our people's greatest force within them is the urge to know, to be free. I've heard old folks say, I just wish you could learn me this, young man. Learn this for me. They might not known how to say it, but that urge was in them. Now, the Satan utilizing the slave masters have put into our people that learning is the property of a white man. Now, see, first of all, let's get to the trichnology. When we start using terms like black and white, we already setting ourselves up for the scheme. When they're saying that you're black, what they're really saying is everything starts in darkness. That's blackness. It is the natural urge first of black. And so they say white is their property, that they are the people of enlightenment. And then let's couple it on with the crucifix. Jesus Christ is a white man. Then it should logically follow, if Jesus Christ is a white man and he is the embodiment of enlightenment, and I am what the postmoderns call the rarefied other, and I don't have a brain, I shouldn't learn. So over 400 years, plus the popular culture, where you have Mr. Shepherd, known as Mr. Rick Ross, Mr. Dwayne, known as Lil Wayne, that was an A student, and you have these rappers who have a congregation bigger than all of the preachers, Muslim, Christians, and others together. They are sterilizing intellect in our people. They're making them feel ashamed. I was at a public school today talking to teachers, and I was saying the problem of African-American youth, they believe that it's a sin to learn. They have been taught that to have a mega brain is the property of the white man. Yes. See, you know, we've been running around, and some of us have been working with Creed, but we've not been able to go out and explain to the people the concepts of what has undermined the good senses of our people. I hope, my dear sister, that I've explained to you from my own humble perspective some of the causes of our people abandoning that which was the strongest urge to know.
Yes,
and maybe
yes,
you can tell
you
us, make your comment.
Yes, you have explained it, but now I'd like to know what the solution is to it.
Well, you're a wise woman, because we shouldn't talk unless we have solutions. It is, we are told in the Holy Book of the Muslims, and this is not a program for Muslims, this is a program for the public, particularly the African-American public. But I've referenced the tools that I have. I don't hold a Bible in my hand, though I know the Bible. I hold the Quran. And the Quran says, fight the schemes of Satan, the devil, the evil one, for they are weak. And how do we fight the schemes of Satan? We come together, the better minds. Let's design contests in our neighborhoods. Smart contests. Let's make it acceptable. Let's come up with spelling bees and learning bees. Huh? Let's bring the smart children up and let's have a hot dog dance around them like we used to do in Africa. And put that smart child in a circle. And as he makes good grades, then we reward him with a dance. Let's stop rewarding the guy with the baggy pants that goes to Norfolk State Prison. Let's reward the guy that goes to Norfolk State University. Let's stop rewarding the guys who go to Northern State Prison, and let's reward the guy that goes to Howard University. Make goodness a virtue. I hope you, that's part of it, but we're going to continue to talk about it, and you can offer your own suggestions. I think we have a caller from, looks like up in Boston, Massachusetts, another Christopher Addicts. Christopher Addicts, are you on the phone?
Are you addressing me, sir?
Yes, sir. Well, I saw Boston. I thought about Christopher Addicts. He ran out and was the first one to die in the Revolutionary War, so I thought you were going to help us with that.
Well, I'm actually coming from the sunny state of Florida, although...
Well, we are mad at you. We have envy to someone who's sitting in Florida, and we're sitting in 50-degree weather. But go ahead. Rub it in.
Yeah, well, Florida had the Seminoles, brother, the Maroons. So it was a kind of different story down there, but we won't go into that. I really enjoyed the sister's question and your answer, and I just had a little small tag to put on that. I remember a few years ago, there was a saying that was out, and it was on T-shirts. It's a black thing, you wouldn't understand. Do you recall that saying?
Yes, sir, I certainly do.
Okay, and you hit on it already, so I just want to be an amen corner if you Muslims will let me do that.
Yes, sir, we would appreciate it.
Okay, and say that part of the problem I think that the sister is referring to and that you were hitting on is this black thing. Okay, when I say it's a black thing and you wouldn't understand, and then the black thing is associated with different ranges of criminality, with profanity, and a whole range of negative attributes that are claimed to be special blackness. And when our civic leaders, our movement leaders, our social leaders, and our intellectual leaders emphasize integration, where if you are in a black school, it's called inferior. Mind you, we said it was a black thing you wouldn't understand, but our youngsters often see themselves in schools that are black and Latino, by definition. So they have been told that they have something that nobody else understands, number one. And number two, they've been told through media and in a variety of ways that their black school is ipso facto, in and of itself, inferior, and that they are prone to dancing and violence and perhaps rhyming words, but not to excellence. So I think that black, one of the first things that we have to do is to give a cultural, is to push a cultural envelope like the one that you mentioned, where we refer people instead of to blackness to Fred Douglas, instead of to blackness to Booker T. Washington and to George Washington Carver, who are people who made the attaining of knowledge for first and foremost. We have to go back to that. Prince Hall and these type of folks. We have to make those reality for our kids. And I'll just close by saying popular culture can be so powerful. And when Stevie Wonder, not to lift him higher than he deserves, but I hold him pretty high, when he sang Sir Duke, or Isn't She Lovely, he was putting messages of empowerment into people's minds.
Yes.
And we kind of lost that platform, and I think we need to reclaim it. I think that would do much. I think that's a better platform. And as our brother Jawanja Kunjufu, I also like to refer him. He's had it's old now, but an excellent series of books on the question of to be smart or to be popular and countering the conspiracy to destroy black boys. It has excellent suggestions on what we can do on the home level, the school board level, the PTA, PTO level.
And, yes, we should have more of those kind of books, and we need teach-ins. You know, I today I just had an opportunity just to teach teachers about this. Because they don't understand that, you know, our young people feel that one child felt insulted and thought he was being put down when someone told him he had a mega brain. And I remember talking to a young man, he said to me, if I'm too smart, they're going to call me white. And they said if you dress up with a suit and tie, you'll call Uncle Tom Negro. So I said, well, I guess I'm an Uncle Tom Negro because I wear suits and ties. And I damn sure don't bag my pants. I don't, you know, feel like I needed a diaper on at my age. So we have to show the humor and satirize these things to show that really learning is cool, is important. But I can tell you what the evil people are doing. They don't want young people to be Bill Gates. They don't want them to compete with Warren Buffett. But if all they can think is how they can spin a ball, and it's a black thing you won't understand, and the ignorance is equated with blackness, then the same thing that happened up at Harvard University about 3 years ago, where a poor young African-American lady from the community, I won't say the ghetto, but the community of Brooklyn,
she was from Harlem,
shoving crack right in her room, and she brought the ghetto right at the Harvard, and I had predicted to a person that we're going to have that going on in Harvard, and that's why I've gotten the terminology. They have placed me in a serious category, and I've been known as a DDS imam, doctor of denigrification. I hate to say this, but you can take a Negro out of the ghetto, but if you don't take the ghetto out of him, and you can put him at Harvard or Oxford, he'll be like Carter G. Woodson said. He said a Negro will go for a back door, and if you don't recondition him, I'm paraphrasing Dr. Woodson, he will build a back door. And
that's
what
right.
We have done is, and even in the academic
hall.
May
I throw something in there?
Listen, please.
When we have to take ourselves seriously. When you said denigrification or something to that effect, that resonated with me. Because when you went to Tuskegee Institute or Lincoln University or Fisk College, these institutions specialize in building a new mode of thinking in the African-American student. Booker T. Washington, if you read his speeches, his chapel speeches that have been collected, he would teach you how to use a toothbrush. He would give a chapel. He had a chapel lecture on the use of the toothbrush.
You know what? With all the deterioration of dental work among African, we need to bring Booker D. Washington. I'm going to put a slogan up, maybe a T-shirt. Where's Booker D. Washington now that we really need him?
Well, that's what we need. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad did similar things.
Yes, sir.
But you see, now we have gotten into a misunderstanding of how we made the progress that we made, and that's allowing us to go backwards. When you mentioned Harvard, I wanted to mention Jeffrey Howard and the Efficacy Incorporated. Now, Jeffrey Howard was a Harvard student along with several other people that we all know in the 60s, and he observed just the phenomenon that you were talking about with the young woman who did not get a degree because she was involved in criminality. That is, the new black consciousness was actually influencing Harvard students to do less well than their own high school careers indicated they should have done. So blackness became something to hold us together, it's true, but also to hold us back from achievement. So he's worked over the years on some excellent methodologies to help us learn how to get smart. You see, how to get smart, how to get out of the box that we constitute for ourselves, the box that we call blackness, and to get into the race. So I mention that because we have a lot of programs that have already been done that we just aren't using, we're not bringing attention to. They can do a lot to help us turn around our kids and be.
Well, if you know this Mr. Jeffrey Howard, I would certainly would put him in touch with us, and we'd like to have him on our broadcast. See, anybody that's working for the advancement of our people, to use the words of the Honorable, I'm bringing our people up, we want them on this program because we believe that that's part of religion. That's a natural way for our people. So we want them on the program. Anybody, I don't care who they are, as long as they're doing something to advance our people, people like Brother George Caldoun, people like Jeffrey Canada, all these people that are working to improve our people's lives. You know,
the last thing, I don't want to stay too long, but I do want to say to both you and to the sister that another thing that we can do to our children that we have now, when people tell them that being dumb is smart, that being black, to be black is to be a thug, just say one name to them. Say President Barack Hussein Obama. Let them know that that's an African-American or a black man, if you will, and that's who you can be.
That's right. I agree with you 100%.
Okay,
and that's
thank you
a
for the time,
powerful
sir.
Model for us.
Yes, sir. Thank you. And when they start telling us about, when they start tearing down the president, let them talk, but don't you chime in.
That's right. That's
use
right.
Use them as a model for the potential of our business.
Well, you sound like you're a Christopher Attic.
But the president is the president.
Well, you know, my brother, you know, I see you from Boston. I thought of Christopher Attic. The only difference is you didn't stagger out of a bar to join the revolution. You walked out of a great sunny Florida. I hope you're not sitting under a palm tree. You know, because you're making us feel mad in the northern areas where we're freezing. But anyway, that's spring will come for us all. Thank you, my dear brother.
I'm trying to walk to Hampton to get some knowledge.
Hey, good. Stay away. Make sure you don't get into it and let the ruffians stop you. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yes, sir.
Brother Ishmael Kadar.
Yes. You hear me?
Yes, sir.
Oh, that's what I like. Peace be unto you.
I like about Islam. Peace be on you.
Yeah. I'm going to chime in. I love the conversation that is going on, transpiring. One of the things I think, this is key, man. I think that we have to study this thing about black, you know. Black is a color, man, and I really, you know, I use it. I belong to some groups that, you know, focus on the word black, but it's been my opinion that the groups that use the word black, they're not really as progressive as they would say they're supposed to be, because I believe that we would never rise if we identify with a color. You know, I believe that even Negro and was a better source for us rising than black. And I know Negro had his problems. You know, colors had his problems. But I believe that this word, this newfound word of black, is almost like the Chinese saying they yellow, or the other man, the Arab saying they brown. You know, I don't believe that nobody could identify with color consciousness, and I know where it came from, and I respect the Honorable Elijah Muhammad because he was talking about a spiritual sense of the word, and they took it from us. And they made, like Imam Muhammad said, there was an orgy with this word of black. And definitely it was the leaders that followed Honorable Elijah Muhammad secretly, many from the church, many from secular world, many from a different world that felt that they couldn't join the Nation of Islam, but they cheered his work on. They borrowed this, coined this word black. But if you would have followed the conclusion, which is Imam W.D. Muhammad, and where we took it, you know, as far as African-American, new African-American, we got to tie the words that come to establishment. I mean, even when I say African-American, our ancestors, like he mentioned Booker T. Washington and Frederick Douglass, they worked to be included in America. I mean, they wore suits. They established establishment here. You know, and we know we're not just considered just American, so we have roots of African. But the reason why we say new African-American, because we know that our history, we are new people. Psychologists, scientists, sociologists, all people understand that we are new people. We are new people. I spoke to a woman from Africa this week, and she hit me up. She's from Ghana, and we're doing some trade. We're working on her, bringing her to the UNI conference. And she explained to me that so many black people, she said, she called me first African-American, and then she apologized to me. And I said, why you got to apologize? She said, because I know that a lot of your people don't want to be called African-American. And she's right. I know a lot of people I put online, man, and people telling me, oh, we not African-American. Now, what kind of crap is this on our mind? You know, because, and I told her, I said, no. I said, that's incorrect. I said, I am African-American, but I said, I'm a new African-American. I said, we and you, we come from the same, we have a predominant history, and like the same Mansa Musa and Ghana and Mali, we have that in our background. That's part of our background. But I said, as far as establishment in this country, our history began on slave ship. She understood it clearly. She said, yeah, oh, wow, that sounds fascinating. But how you want to have a
and
word?
Your movement would say that sounds very presidential.
Yeah. See, this is why I don't like the word, because how are you going to identify with color, but then when you talk with Africans and other people that are going to naturally say, hey, I'm blacker than you. Hey, I'm black. I'm black, too. And then you're going to say, well, we're not talking about you. It's stupid. It doesn't make sense. It's retarded. I'm serious. I'm going to be the one. I know I might have slack of people that's going to be out there, groups, but you're never going to establish anything with that word. That word is not meant to dignify you. It's meant to keep you outside of the knowledge. It's dealing with your spiritual makeup. And when Honorable Elijah Muhammad dealt with it, European mind was in a bad makeup because of him using whiteness as purity, and he was European. He didn't understand even the knowledge of himself. So he was really talking to wake the people up of the spiritual nature of hardness in religion, and that's why the Jews wear black garments, and, you know, snake and sciences, they teach blackness, the cosmos, everything original. So our people are drunken by the, oh, yeah, everything come from black. Oh, yeah, color, all black. But this is that spiritual information. Now, if you want to tie to buy some land, you want to tie to become established people, you're going to have to identify with what your history and the establishment. The China, I go to Chinese. I go to China, I can learn Chinese language. And it's a land called China. If you want to go to India, there's a place called India. There's never going to be a place called black. Get that out of your head. There's never going to be a place called yellow. There's not going to be a place called green unless you put land on it. And so the whole thing is, if we in America and we're not going to get our full citizenship, our full business rights, we identifying as a culture group with black. Now, we could be proud to be black. I know how people tell me I'm black, and, you know, but this is the wrong situation right now. I mean, it was a time where this word could, you know, I understand what the use of it, but it's outdated. It has hurt us from 1960s and on. It's nothing but destroyed black America. It has done nothing but put us on drugs. It has done nothing but put us on spiritual highs. It has nothing but done to us to, I mean, there's a brother, Wesley Muhammad, and I'm going to put him on, you know, because I understand his. He has a book out called Black Arabia, man. Now, if you are so ignorant to think, I mean, I respect the minister, I respect the brother, but the whole point is, if you're going to believe that the Arabs would consider themselves Black Arabia, Black Arabs, and you, then you have some problems on you. Bilal was Abyssinian. They call him that word, and it was inferiority, that complex that they were facing when they would say black and nigger and call him these words of, you know, black, he's black like this. And that was offensive to him. There wasn't no situation of his dignity. He was Abyssinian. You know, so we have to understand that these things are outdated. They don't signal land. They signal that you're floating in the sky. You're just like the colors, the sun, the moon, and everything else floating in the sky. And you're never going to come to earth. And that's what I really believe, that our people have to come into that identity or a new identity. If it maybe they didn't want to be called African-American, but have some, I consider new African-American. Once the man said new Africa, that's my destiny. You know, our destiny is to, but I know we're American too. So when you fill out something on the report, your consensus bureau, there's nothing that says black. There's African American, Chinese, you know, and we want to isolate ourselves, but if we don't realize that when we talk about consumer base, this is how the others view our community. There's no such thing in America as a separate black community. Oh, we all one in America, you know, and now we want them as Muslims, as African Americans born here, indigenous people, we want to take leadership. We could always take leadership within that group. Just like America, Barack Obama's over the nation, over Americans, and he took leadership, although he's an African American or black, what you consider black American. So don't fear that. Don't fear that because of our brothers and sisters from Haiti and Jamaica are coming here with these names. Oh, I want we have to signal establishment, and they will come in an establishment. They will come to the establishment. Arabs even have brothers that are not grow up in Arabia, but they're from here. They consider themselves Arab Americans. Some of the Arabs come here and say, wow, this brother is a little westernized. They're not the same united. They're not all united on the same cultural traditions of somebody influenced over an American and somebody influenced that grew up in Dubai, but they share a commonality of principles. So when they establish groups, and I'm here every day, I see the Chinese American Society, the Arab American Society, they don't even come here with the first root of the Muslim American Society. They come here as Arabs, whether you're Christian or Muslim Arab. So my point is, why are we the only group identifying with this? If you saw a group that said they're the white American, you say, oh, that's racist. You know, we got to understand that we've been formed by the people who didn't understand religion properly, and they formed the Jacobites formed the, you know, we go into that later, but we really understand that. That this terminology is off, it's outdated, it won't work. And I've been to many groups, many functions. I told this to my Black Panthers, my friends, my, you know, they all, we laugh about it, but they understand in a sense of their mind, it won't work. It just cannot happen. It's the only people, we're the only people on earth that identify to something that has nothing to do with land, nothing to do with earth. You're going to cultivate, use earth. And then when we get into these groups, we go all, we looking at the people that had names that identified the tribe that they was from, Moors, and we studying Egypt and Ethiopia. They all had tribes, and we sitting there with color on our mind. Even Prophet Muhammad descended from a tribe. You know, he was from a tribe, and he didn't change that bloodline of Arab, even though he was sent for humanity. He wasn't the yellow group. I'm laughing, but it's very funny to me.
Yeah. So what you're saying is really that we have to follow cultural patterns. People are known by cultures rather than by race. Race is a concept. Much later, I think it was a German guy by the name of Kuhn that came up with these ideas. These are divisive terms. But as you were saying earlier, we have to define what life is about in America. And I'm just happy to see that you are a person that is working in the business community. Tell us about your You and I conference that will take place.
Oh, beautiful. The You and I conference. We're getting it ready as of now. We have a strong team we're putting in place. And what it is, what first and all foremost, the symbolisms of the letters, we wanted to spark unity among our people. In general, our people are missing the unity concept that all, I think, you know, from our Honorable Elijah Muhammad, Imam Muhammad, Marcus Garvey, great teachers all taught the unity concept. Even our founding fathers, they before we get into the America and the great name, it was a united cause. And so what's missing in business, especially in the African-American community, is we have so many different ideas and terminology and trying to isolate ourselves. And like I said in the beginning, everybody else that targets us as one group, you know, that like chicken. And they use these things, but they target us in our neighborhood as one group that has a bodega, you know. So I felt that there was a need for someone, a group, an establishment to bring back the unity aspect of business and social unity. Social unity is how the Imam said, like when we go out to functions, sometimes we don't like to stand with the African-American community. You have the Muslim and the Christian church to get divided, though they're one group. Wear similar suits, wear the same type of, you know, their sons wear the same shirts. So the UNI conference is really trying to sparkle us to work together and fostering unity and fostering economic development, clearly economic development. And not a system, it's not going to be based on just a bunch of speeches and flowery speeches. It's going to be actually a work in progress. And we want to build a model community. We want to start fostering model community development. We also want it to become, will be like a banking system. It'll be a banking system because a lot of people, you go to business conferences, which is good. I've been through a lot of them. But they kind of make either businesses network with each other. But a lot of businesses can't go to that person or that entity for any money. They can't come and say, hey, we need a $200,000 for this restaurant. Or I have a clothing idea. I need $20,000 for my clothing. So the you and I concept is to force our unity together, our collective purchasing power, so we're investing in people. So there's no more pyramid schemes. It's taking away the pyramid schemes and the things that are about taking the people's money, whether the masjid and the churches. I love them. I love a lot of our brothers, but they're putting money to imams. They're giving money to people who just building to the sky, what they would say, building to the sky, meaning that the building is going to the sky, but the community itself is not, can't go to that place for opportunity to be certified. And right now, a lot of our people are missing out on opportunities in the government, in state contracts, in economic empowerment, knowing their credit score, because this is not being taught. It's not being taught by the school system. It's not being taught by the preachers. It's not being taught by the imam. So what the UNI, what we want to do is we want to give this to our people. We want to give it to the church. We want to give it to the Muslims. We want to give it to this, even the brothers and sisters in hip-hop in the world that don't claim anything. We want to give them a more an awareness of their responsibility, a more awareness of their power, a more awareness of coming together. As a businesses, we're going to foster businesses coming together also with collective purchases and ideas and going to cities and neighborhoods and helping, giving jobs. Because once we give our people also jobs, we can help our people get off of the crime, not having money. One of the major issues in our neighborhood is that you don't see one established building. And it's not just based on money. It's not just based on taking money from the people and just being an internet business and everybody's successful. That's great. That's a part of it, you know, for people to have money and things in their pocket. We are going to be doing many charitable works, but we're fostering establishment in our neighborhood. When you go outside, you don't see any chicken restaurants. You don't see any facilities owned by us. So the UNI conference is going to sponsor. It's going to be like a system. It's the history of America changing right now. We want to be what Wall Street was to America. This is what the UNI will serve. We want to be. We want to take on the principles of Islam also by not saying we're just Muslim, by going into the business lending, the lending of not being usury, not being interest. When we give money, we don't want to be interest killing businesses. So we feel that if we can't go to Bank of America right now and get $20,000 or $30,000 for if I have a T-shirt idea, then we have to do this ourselves. We have to look at the model of Black Wall Street, and we've done it. We have it. That's what we're doing. So alhamdulillah, all praise is due to God from our Christian and public audience that we have now created a model that is going to work. We're working on it heavy. It's been tested. It's a model. It's a system that are based on a lot of principles, but it's one of the biggest principles that's working in its favor is for us to come together. I mean, Prophet Muhammad, many people lie on the Prophet, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and say that he was, you know, charity, he made charity to become, you know, a situation where you just go to the masjid and pay charity. That's wrong. That's not correct. As a matter of fact, in the Quran, charity shows that charity is supposed to force a development. So the UNI conference also wants to put this out to the public. The backwards idea is that these imams and preachers sometimes don't understand, you know, many of them don't understand. That's why there's nothing going on outside. We want to be someone that doesn't focus so much on what they're not doing, but focus on the message of what we have to promote. And what they're not doing is they're not telling the truth. That the Prophet Muhammad, Solomon, mentioned in the Bible, David, mentioned in the Bible, and the Quran, Abraham, mentioned in the Bible and the Quran, these were all great businessmen that changed the social order of things. And they could not be a leader. Abraham was the leader of all nations. You can't be a leader without promoting the true charity. Obama cannot be the leader of the free world without trying to give jobs, without trying to give opportunity. So we have to leave. The UNI is going to sponsor drives to teach the people. If you want to make a prayer, no problem. Go to your church and your salat. No problem. You want to go to the masjid. But we want to let the people know that you're not going to get any real, true economic empowerment and salvation at most of these places. You're not going to get anything for establishment because we're not following the true prophet's model, which was collective purchasing power. Imam Muhammad was key in working on this. He was really trying to develop that with CPC. And the UNI conference, we're not in competition with CPC. We're just taking what our leader gave us in New Africa and making it happen. You know, so with Prophet Muhammad, one thing he instituted is, you know, Islam is one of the religions where when you make the Eid prayer, when you make prayer, you give some money. You give a zakat. You give a charity. But we know in the Quran it teaches us that there's no such thing as Muslims buying their way into heaven. There's no such thing as buy a prayer that, you know, you give money, you know, on Juma and this is going to make you more holy or more holified. So right then and there, that should tell your conscience that he was not doing this. He was not saying that, oh, you know, this is going to cleanse you. This was a social responsibility for society. So if the men come together, 10,000, 20,000 men, this is how they build roads if everybody gives a dollar. If you study Chinese, which I keep telling people to study China, China realized at a point, and I went to a conference with the Chinese about a month ago with my father, and we were blessed to go to Wharton University, top business university in this country. This is where W.B. Du Bois went to school. And what they're teaching with the Chinese delegation that came there, there was a member over Sony, of the China operation of Sony Enterprise of China. The largest division is in China right now. And it happened to speak to a Chinese brother from China. And he is doing better than any operation of Sony in America, Sony in Italy, Sony over. He's doing the best in China. And what he said in his lecture is he gave us the history of China. And when I looked at the history of China, I realized that Chinese was facing the same problems from the 30s to the 50s to the 70s to the 90s. He grouped it like that, as us, as African-American people. And what they had to realize is that they were a burden on the government for a very in the 30s. They were like a war generation. They spoke more about being committed to the government and the government being committed to them. But most of them were poor. They didn't have anything but strength in numbers. They didn't really have anything. When the Chinese government realized, hey, we got to make some of our people independent. How are we going to do that? They realized their greatest asset was their people. I repeat again. They realized their greatest asset is their people. So the whole world is missing out on China. They looking at China resources. Oh, they have copper. Oh, they're producing this. Oh, they're producing machines. And in the elite in Wharton universities, what they're teaching now and what they're showing in their people is that when they realized that they unified and came together and said, hey, we got over a billion people. If everybody put up a dollar, that's $1 billion. See, this is what Prophet Muhammad sponsored in the world. So if you have a group that, this is why I'm encouraging every imam has to be a business leader. But I named all the imams that were business leaders or had a nature to help their condition about their people. Why? Because it's not just about them raising $1 billion. They had to have trustworthy organizations and people that were really investing in the people's life and teaching entrepreneurship, teaching that caliph nature in Islam, creative nature, and fostering entrepreneurship. In 1920s in this country, when this country was going to a great promise, they didn't know about tomorrow, but they invested in entrepreneurship, new ideas, of creating new systems. Bill Gates has fostered a new system. They've gone off the economic theory based on the fact that there's no such thing as scarcity. The scarcity is a lie. When I was in school, they taught that scarcity was economics. You know, that it was about the limited resources and put scarcity. With Bill Gates in 1920s, it showed that the human mind was the actually the final frontier, because it knows no possibility, no ends. We could create things tomorrow if we have to. We invest in the ability to create entrepreneurs, to create millionaires. So we should have imams that want to see at least 20 people in their congregation with $1 million in their pocket. I mean, we got to tell it like it's real. We have to have preachers with that same thing. And I know without challenging them, we need to re-educate the Negro today or the African-American today about these concepts. And one of the concepts that the Chinese, when they started to do that, look at how they lead in technology. Look at how they teach, when they start to invest in this type of engagement in their people, and given it, guess what? Now they're big, because guess what? Everybody wants to come to China because they know they could reach those people. They know if I got a store in the middle of
Ishmael, we have a caller
okay.
That
no problem.
I want to bring on. I think you want to make some comments.
Yes, yes, okay. Sir. We love
it. Caller, you're on the air with Brother Ishmael Kadar.
Brother Imam, good evening, and how are you?
Good evening.
So, you know, I've been listening. Part of the law of modern technology to be traveling through what I call it the militarized zone, or the militarized zone, and still listen to your broadcast. So I was listening to your broadcast on the bus. Now I'm off the bus and I'm in my apartment. So I just want to make a few observations. Number one, I'm 57 years old. I've never referred to myself as a Negro, nor do I intend to do so. And I don't see any real fault with our people born stateside, that is to say, in the United States of America, referring to themselves as Black Americans. Now, I vacillate between African American and Black American, but I'm more personally comfortable referring to myself as a Black American because I think there has to be some distinction made for us born stateside in this kind of mythological connection that we continue to have with folks born and raised in Africa. As I understand it, 23% of Americans own passports. I think the statistic I read is 5% of our people in this country own passports, which means most of us have never traveled anywhere outside of this country at all. And I've had the pleasure to do so. I've had some good interactions with Africans. I've had some bad ones. But I think there's something that has to be made distinct for our people dealing with their issues in a unique situation, descendants of slaves in America. I think we have to deal with that first and foremost. It's with respect to this whole idea that somehow or another in America, the idea of race as a biological entity somehow is dissipated is a ridiculous idea, and it's just absurd. I just have to make that clear. And as you fully well know, I've worked in New York City at a number of accounting, legal, and investment banking concerns, and the racism based on the way I look like is very real. Then and now, the President of the United States, his mother is white, father's African, would have had a hard time given his academic pedigree heading up any major firm in this country prior to becoming the President of the United States. That's a fact. The final point I want to make, and I think the point you made earlier is very interesting, is that the people who run the popular culture have made a tacit decision, nothing new about this, to engage in the kind of cultural COINTELPRO where they continue to feed the masses of our people what I call cultural crack. The last 35 years has been horrendous. When I was in high school in the 1970s, the fellows I hung around with, people I kept company with were people who were interested in learning, did not associate learning with being white. In fact, what we were scared would be stupid or ignorant. That shifted. There's been a shift. And I think what we have to do, the older folks, the elders, the parents, and what have you, is to recognize that there's a movement afoot among the people who run this country that have always decided to dump this garbage into what they consider to be the Black communities or the people who they feel should be destroyed. And the final point I want to make is there is absolutely no comparison between Black folks sitting stateside and the Chinese. None whatsoever. This, again, is mythological thinking. Period. There's no comparison. First of all, the Chinese have thousands of years of history. They just didn't pop out of no place, right? The Africans, the Africans sitting in Africa are sitting on land, real land, and resources, diamonds, iron, whatever the case may be. They're still in a state of arrested development, sitting on the land. They're supposedly theirs. You understand what I'm saying? They have this. The Chinese are over in Africa right now doing whatever they have to do to get resources out of Africa to help build what they have to do in China. It's a business relationship. So these are just a couple of points that I want to make. Thank you so much.
Thank you so
much. Thank you.
Thank you. I get a chance to address the brother, right?
Yes, sir. Certainly, yes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But this is an open discussion.
Oh, I love the brother, but he reminds me of the old mind. Like, he reminds me of how people are burdened by myth. first of all, I didn't say we, I know, first of all, my history very well. Alhamdulillah, all praise due to God. And I didn't say we are like the, we, as far as the condition, are like the Chinese. I know we've been denied more than any other people the resources of land, the resources of language, the resources of culture. I understand our condition very well. But what I'm saying to you and him in the public is that you're not going to be able to go over these hurdles with just the pain of what white America gave you on, as far as your representation on your skin, on color. And he formed you just like they formed Jesus Christ. The Jesus Christ, same structure of giving you soul, but giving you no other physical environment, giving you no other social environment. And that way, when you come into religion, whether you're a Muslim now or whether you're a Christian, you're just going to go after the spiritual side. You're going to go, and this has been formed in you. This is what I'm trying to explain. So what I'm saying to you is that when the America, when the white Europeans who knew he came from Europe, knew they denied things to Italians in this country. That's why the Italians had to go underground. So everybody wasn't on the same pedestal just because they came from Europe. The Ireland, they got a certain, the Anglo-Saxons, if we study them, they came together. They were two tribes, and they reversed everything in Europe. So when they came here hungry, and they needed a burden of myth. So after they ate up the whole country, then they came, they said they were white. Then they said they were white to keep everyone else outside of what they had set up. What I'm saying to you is a people that's burdened by myth, that have nothing, you can't do the same thing as a people that already are established with land and Italians, Irish, and then they say they, and then they came into white. So what I'm saying to you is, the Chinese, definitely, if you study them, they definitely were, a lot of Chinese were poor. Now, major part of Chinese weren't, didn't have what we have today. Some of the Chinese, yes, we have great thinkers among them. Yes, they were men that had land that we couldn't dream of having that type of land. But I know brothers today that got brownstones. I know brothers today that got own companies. I know, I can mention rappers that have millions of dollars. I can mention people I know that have better conditions than people that come into this country. I mean, as a youth, when are we going to be real with ourselves and stop making excuses as far as, and that's what I find, that word black is associated with pain.
Well,
when I say about Negro, is Negro itself was not the word that I like to use, but to me, I always look at it as need to grow. So I feel that the Negro, when you had Negro around the time Martin Luther King, around the time of the advancement of colored people, Carter G. Woodson, I feel that Frederick Douglass, I feel they made more progress with that word than we are making as with this word black.
Well, let me just finish.
Right. I'm going to finish. And what I'm saying to you is, this is myth. Imam W.D. Muhammad, our leader, I mean, some accept it. He talked about this burden of myth that's on us. There's no people in the world that are yellow, red, green, and we consider ourselves black. There's no land that you could go that's called black. There's no language that you're going to get that's called black.
It doesn't make a difference, sir.
Yeah, it makes a difference to me. Because at the end of the day, let me tell you, a lot of rap kids, the sisters would tell you, a lot of rap kids all day in music, oh, I'm black. Yeah, we black. Is it fostering culture? Is it fostering development? I couldn't care less if a whole group of Africans
that's
came.
That's not the point.
I could not care less if a whole group of Africans came here and said, I don't want to be seen with you people. It's not their claim what we're about to do in Africa with trade. It's not their claim. My thing is, we let too many people, how they view us, we become sensitive and we don't have no self-determination and economic. We so sensitive, if somebody don't receive us the way we're supposed to receive, oh, let's not go with that. And that's the way the word, I view word black, as very emotional. That's how I view it.
May I speak, sir?
And I look at the evidence. I look at the evidence as the youth, Harlem plays.
You haven't presented any evidence. You just run it out.
Well, the evidence is outside.
There is no evidence.
The evidence is outside. The evidence is.
The Africans right now, in circa right now, as we speak, 2013, are sitting on a massive land mass.
I'm talking about us as a people.
Now, no, I'm just saying they're calling themselves Africans.
I'm not kidding. I said we're African Americans. I'm not considering what they.
Hold it. You raised the issue with the Chinese, so I'm trying to.
Okay.
Trying to make a point here.
Yes, sir. What's
right?
the point?
You raised the issue with the Chinese. I don't live in China. Do you? So
I bet you that iPhone that you on, you gotta use some of their technology.
I don't have an iPhone.
You have any type of new phone? Do you have
any phone?
Any phone
that you on is not produced in Africa. They sitting on land.
What I'm saying to you, brother, and I hear you, but I'm saying to you is if you can't learn from a story or a culture that shows me exactly where most of the black movement is.
I didn't say we're Chinese. You're making these claims.
Look, we look at Jerusalem. Look, we look at these stories. Jesus in the Bible, Jerusalem. We study Prophet Muhammad coming from Arabia. And if you can't look at a group and see a story, you can't see the moral. You can't see the logic no more from the story. Just because they ain't come, and that's how I feel with most people that use this word black. This is what I'm saying. When you see most people that use this word black, anytime you present something outside of the word black, outside of this world, they can't accept it. Now, when we were African Americans, when we were Negroes, when we were Negroes, African Americans, even Booker T. Washington,
right?
You read the history. They could study world history. They could study things that worked in other civilizations. They could study these things. That's all I'm saying. All I'm saying to you, brother, is most of us that have accepted this, whether throwing our black power fists, whether coming to religion as black men, whether coming to this, we can't accept anything else that doesn't present a picture of ourselves. And to me, that's self-worship.
That's not my point.
Okay. Well,
that's not my point.
I'm trying to listen to the point. But my point of the Chinese is
not
I didn't say we were the Chinese. I said we were at a war tent.
What you guys normally do. You try to monopolize the conversation. You don't want to hear what anybody else has to say.
No, I heard your point, brother.
No, you didn't hear. You've been running your mouth for the last 15 minutes.
I heard your point, brother. Yes, sir.
Go ahead. You're not talking to an itinerant crackhead on the other end of this phone.
Oh, but who said you was a crackhead, brother?
Well, then you need to learn some respect and let other people speak.
Go ahead, brother.
I'm finished talking to this guy, man.
Oh, man, that's a brother. Got a lot of anger over here, man.
Yeah, I got a lot of anger. Cause I'm going to tell you why I got a lot of anger.
What's
you
up?
Start making these claims you're making.
Okay.
Right? You're making these sweeping claims.
What claim,
right.
brother? That
and
we
I'm
African American
saying,
people?
About
that we do African
Do you know
people?
Any iPhones made in Africa? Do you know any other phones made in Africa? They sitting on land over there. They got a lot of most of the minerals and resources that are used to make these phones. They getting them out of there. Do you know any phones made in Africa? They sitting on land. They calling themselves Africans.
I'm not trying to just be funny, brother. But what? You
I'm not trying to be
Africa,
funny, but
no
I think you're
I'm talking about the heritage of being from a place.
That,
all
what
I'm you're saying
talking
is
about
you're from
is ridiculous.
A, okay, no problem. So you're saying to me, basically, you don't want to identify with
I'm
coming
you
from culturally.
We have
you don't,
people sitting. I just took your logic. And I'm telling you, you got Africans, Ghanaians, South Africans, whatever within that continent. They're sitting on land right now.
Yes, sir.
No iPhones are made there. Most of the stuff that they're getting there is imported into the country.
Yes, sir.
Most of those countries are underdeveloped, but they're sitting on land.
Well, brother, I think you hear me wrong. First of all, let me tell you this.
I'm talking about us here, brother.
You
need to do a little bit more reading and stop running your mouth.
Listen, what I'm saying. I'm talking about us here as a people. I'm not talking about going to Mali, Ghana. See what I'm saying? You taking us off the topic. Nobody's talking about.
Listen,
I'm saying.
Most
listen,
of us,
what I'm
as
saying.
I said before.
Okay, all right, bro.
Most of us, as I said before, 23% of Americans—that's everybody—own passports.
Yeah.
And out of that 23%, 5% are our people. That is to say, African Americans, Black Americans, or ethnically undeclared.
I'm saying
Americans.
What's black? That's all I'm trying to say. What heritage is black? Just tell me where you could read even in scriptures. of a group. Even when you look at Joseph over Egypt, show me where it says he was come from the black. You can't. You can show me Kush. You can show me Kush. I'll study, brother. You can show me Kush. You can show me Empire.
Well, I'm not.
So all I'm saying that if we're going to return to civilization, like every other civilized group, we have to become real, and we cannot be a people like spook.
What does real mean? What does that
real
mean?
To me means, real means that you identify with a cultural tradition of
which
land.
What does that mean?
We're going to go in. We talk about citizenship. Where you have your citizenship?
I'm in America.
Where do you have your culture? Where did you come from? Where did you come from? Because you know you don't want to identify with. You know you don't want to identify truly with America. Most of us. So
this is where I was born and raised.
Okay, so
and
you what you consider
where I was born?
Where you was born?
I wasn't born in Nairobi.
Brother, it's fine, no problem. I don't want to disturb the water, so if you want to consider
yourself
black.
You're not disturbing my waters at all.
Yeah.
you on dry land, you're not on water.
Okay, brother, we establishing it. That's what we do. We establishing over here,
say,
brother.
All I'm saying to you is that when you start making these wild claims,
ain't wild, brother.
You need to know what you're talking about. You
brother,
know
I know,
what you're
brother,
about.
You haven't provided one evidence of what you're saying makes sense.
I gave you
And at the end of the day, you're telling me you was born and wherever, you know, I know you're talking about United States. So you're a product of the United States using a color word.
Well, I was born in the United States.
I'm just saying that's like me being led to Dominican and telling them I'm the yellow people. That's all I'm saying.
I was born in the United States.
I'm
that's
yellow,
where
okay?
I was born.
I'm yellow. We got different shades. So what I'm saying is when other civilized groups look at you identifying with a color and you see white, yellow, green, everything in the spectrum among that race,
right,
including brothers that have been forced to do slave trade, you don't look civilized. It looks stupid. It doesn't look intelligent. That's what I'm saying.
Right.
It doesn't look intelligent. That's all I'm saying.
As far as you
can never get into development.
Wait a minute. When other people outside of us see you, they see you as the absolute epicenter of civilization. Is that correct?
You said what?
I said when other people see you, conceptually, somehow or another, you represent the epicenter of civilization. Is that correct?
You only represent two things. I don't know if they could say would say all that.
Like,
I don't know if that. Some would call me a Negro. Some would call me a Negro. Some would call me a new African.
No, but they're not looking at you. That you
I think it would be a Negro though in their mind. I don't think they're looking at me as the type of civilization which you profess.
No, I said the epicenter of civilization. That's different.
Yeah, but you saying that you feel that when people look
so
at
I'm saying like if you and I were walking down the street.
Yes, sir.
Right. Somehow or another, you're going to be discerned as the epicenter of civilization, as opposed to me or somebody else. Is that correct?
Depends on what shade. I don't know. I can't say that. I can't really. I can say I can't say that they would think that. I can say that. That's known. That'd be a known fact. I think they would go for their pocketbook.
I got news for you.
Most Americans
see you no differently than they see anybody else, brother.
Who said I was different than anybody else? I said
they
that they're really going to look at
you're
me.
Not
brother, I'm from Harlem. So at the end of the day,
you from
I'm
Harlem,
going
and
up
I was born in Brooklyn.
Huh?
Right? So we both New York is my
yeah,
birth.
Yeah, exactly. And what
so,
I'm trying to
so
tell
like,
you
when
is,
you get up in
when
the
I go
morning,
into other neighborhoods, wait, hold on, let me talk. When I go into other neighborhoods, I see them grab their pocketbooks and stuff. So for me to say they looking at me as the top of civilization.
Go into other neighborhoods, you see what now?
They grab and they go go the other way. Let's not go this way.
Well, I got news for you.
So
here,
I don't know if they're looking at me as the top prince. I'm trying to tell you that the reason why brothers like you, I'm not disrespecting you, but I know brothers that read all this black these books like the new book that's out, Black Arabia. You hide for a few minutes. This is what I'm saying. You hide for a few minutes. It was, oh, my people were this and we did that and we built this and pyramid. But you're going to go right back to sleep, go
listen,
right back home.
Brother,
right
let me tell you
back,
something.
Well,
I've gotten on
hold
the elevator.
Hold on. You don't have
cut
anything.
I want to right here.
Huh?
Because I've gotten on elevators in New York City.
Yes, sir.
With made-to-measure suits on, 18-karat gold watch, $700 pair of shoes, gold cufflinks, well-educated and civilized, only to hear white little boy ask his mother, well, mommy, is he the elevator man?
I know. See?
Now, did that have something to do with me acting like I'm uncivilized? That's their burden, not ours. That's their burden.
Of course.
They
but you asked me, what would they say when they see me? That's what you asked.
Pocketbook.
But you asked me, the question you asked me, brother, was what would they say when they see me?
If you really want to get technical, the biggest thieves in the world is the white man.
I mean, see, that's what I'm trying to explain. Brother, cut. I like this caller, but I think we gotta go into another direction because I would have finished my address. And the main thing I'm trying to say, okay, yeah, you still talking about the white man.
No, you know what, brother, let me just say this to you. I want to have a different
perspective. What I'm trying to explain is, and a sister brought this up this week to me. I think Laura Hill said this. She said the minute that we keep everything that's around us is surrounding the white man, you're giving him all your credit. And my point is this, that I'm talking about establishment, have no problem for my black brothers that want to identify with a black. Y'all could come on. Boy, I got a lot of my friends, but I'm just going in this way. I'm going the direction that I know that we have to go into. I'm going the direction that Imam W.D. Muhammad spoke about as New Africa. Even Tupac Shakur, where did he start before he died? The New Africa group. You could look that up. Tupac started, and he died like about 10 days after that. We have to go into new. We new people. We are new people. And I mean, if you want to identify with color, fine. I'm not taking that away from you. I'm just saying my people outside, the youngsters, they starving. They don't. What you talking about? They starving. They know that that's not getting them anything. That until a point where they don't even want to be identified with that color no more. And that's why they taking all type of deals and oaths, and going with the lumen, all type of stuff because that ain't have nothing. Yet, the baby of Cash Money has tears on his face. And they said to baby, he said, why you got tears on your face? He said, I've got tears. And this is sad. I'm not saying this is proud. But he said the black community gave him pain, so he's going to give pain back to the black community. So you see how they using this word? You see how we being identified? I'm saying, and the brother, you know, I'm not, this brother is my unified brother, and I respect him. I respect his opinion. I don't want him to take the wrong way, but I'm saying that I was talking about the Chinese, not to they're our fathers, for us to run the China. That's not what I was saying. I was talking about the Chinese as things they overcame, that if we look at unity, if we look at certain principles that every other group has, we could become better. We could become a better new people among ourselves, not bringing them into the picture. That's not what I'm saying. And what I find is when I talk to people that identify so strongly with this word black, when you say anything of that learning, it becomes blocks for learning and the environment of learning, the environment of moving on, the environment of religion. I mean, many can't even accept Islam on the basis of that. You know, where it came, you was taught by the Arabs. And see, so what I'm saying is that is what is killing us, that psychology in the back of our makeup is killing us. And this is why I believe the Imam also was moving away from that word. He talked about it, hurting us. Black Entertainment, what's making us look worse on TV? The other networks or Black Entertainment Television? What's making us look funny in business? All these other people are Black Enterprise. And I'll tell you straight up and down, they're not producing no leadership. They're not producing nothing on Black Entertainment Television. They're producing the same people that's plaguing your community, plaguing your children, plaguing was the spirit of America. And if you want to identify with it, it's cool. I don't want to identify with that. I don't want to. And I'm not scared to be the new African. I'm not scared. I don't look at no people. Like, I'm not scared to be American just because others in America abuse the American right. I'm not scared to say I'm the American, the type. I'm not scared to be the president like Obama just because other people abuse the presidential right. We got to stop being the people just because they corrupt the nature of the thing. We want to resign. We want to, oh, I'm not that no more. That's emotional people. And also, look at the president. He's going through Congress, right? Brother Iman Alfred, are you there?
I'm here. Religion means a lot. This is a live program.
I want to ask you this,
you know,
this quick.
You can join the conversation at, we have about 5 more minutes, 805-727-7013. Press 1 on your phone. If we don't get to you, probably technical difficulties, or if we do, but keep talking.
Well, check this out. I told a brother, because I'm looking at all the imams in our community and abroad in the church, and look at they have a problem with one of our esteemed brothers and leader. Right now, my kids, they're having problems and saying, oh, I'm not going to go to this. I'm not supporting this. I'm not doing this and that. And I said, look at how these words have formed us to be that same type of way, resigning from leadership. And I said, look at the Congress. Obama is in Congress. Many of the people don't agree with Obama. We know they're working against the beloved president. They're working against him. But look how many of them don't resign. Look how many of them are not saying, I'm not going to be the senator no more because I don't like this man. Look how many of them are saying, I'm not going to be that Republican. So in other words, just because the post they feel is tainted, they still hold allegiance to what the post means to them. So even if that man is there, and look at us. Now on our vice, look at us on the flip side. We feel the post is tainted, so we leave. You feel your message ain't working, amen, so rather than having heart and putting pressure on them, you run to another message. You run across the street. Oh, New York is too bad, so rather than establishing New York and Harlem the way, you go down south to Atlanta. We're weak people on that level, and that's what I'm saying about the race issue, the same way. It's being used. I'm not knocking the way it's used. What the origin of the word, I have pride in being a black man. I can say I'm a black man. I got my book. But I'm saying in today's time, Imam Muhammad said one time that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was speaking facts. He said facts deal with the time you're in, the nature of a thing. But the truth, this is why we look at Abraham and Prophet Muhammad for the truth. The truth is, was the white man the devil? That was a fact of that period. He was acting and behaving the devil, and many of them. But he said the truth of the matter is many of them repented. We have opportunities we didn't have back when we had those times. Was that the true history of all time? No. So what I'm appealing to is truth. I'm not appealing to the fact. Facts could be defined. I know my skin what it is.
Brother, he said we have one caller.
Okay.
One of our supporters from, I believe she's from Brooklyn. We're going to bring her on. Sister, you are on the air with Religion Means a Lot.
Hello,
sister.
My salam.
Yes, sir. That's New York, my brother. I prefer to use Philolian.
Alhamdulillah.
Opposed to black.
That's
opposed
better.
To Negro. Philolian speaks volume for us. Alhamdulillah,
sister. Well, exactly.
If you'd like to comment and tell us why, you know, let me just say this to you about this program. Religion Means Alive is not a censorship. This is an open broadcast. We have people, especially our supporters. We people who just call in just to talk. We don't give the priority to those people. We give priority to the people who have given our support. But it's open to everybody. You know, we all are not free. There are some people who call this program, they're Muslims, some are Christians, some are atheists, all types of people. You never build a civilization until you have all types of people. So this is really, for the Islamic people, this is shura. It's open discussions.
Open discussions.
And among themselves, consultating among themselves. We're not going to allow hogs to come on the program. You know what a hog is? He just eats everything up. But we're not going to do that. We're going to let everybody state their positions. We're going to debate. I enjoyed our dear brother that called in. And
me too.
Brother Ishmael presented his position. This is fine. I didn't say anything. I want that to continue. So, dear sister, state why you think we should use the term Bilalian. We're talking about culture and identity. That's fine. Thank you. Thank you so much. If you have any other comments, sister?
No, sir.
Thank you so much, sister.
Well,
I think we're not out of message, but we definitely are out of time. And we will see you tomorrow on Religion Means Alive at 6 o'clock tomorrow evening Eastern Standard Time, 5 o'clock Central Standard Time. Mountain Standard Time. We will be on at 5 o'clock. But we will be on. And today we had a great program, Religion Means Life. If we can have this vigorous debate block to block, neighborhood to neighborhood, the district, this will be people will be watching and listening to the program like they used to watch the Muhammad Ali fights. Who is going to be next? Are we in the lion's den? Let's roar. Peace be on our noble and honorable listening audience. To see you again tomorrow on Religion Means Life.
And that sister, I'm going to keep her on.
Alhamdulillah.
Oh, sis, you there?
Yes, I am.
We're closing out the broadcast.
Okay, the broadcast is over.
I believe it's over, yes.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.